This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 415.
Billionaires take asymmetric bets. And, you know, you always hear that, you know, great risk, great rewards. And, you know, billionaires would just disagree with that. I mean, you could still take bets that if you're right, you would be ridiculously rich. And if you're wrong, you just didn't lose much.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everyone? It's Brandon Turner, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. David Green. David, thanks for coming back on the show again, man. Not that I was worried about you not coming on, but it's good to have you here again.
There's literally nowhere that I'd rather be. Thank you, Brandon.
All right, good. Well, today's show is all about billionaires, and I don't want that to scare anybody off. What really we're talking about today is some of the habits, the traits, the things that wealthy people do. And like our guest goes into specifically how you can apply these things to your life. In fact, he goes into three specific traits that billionaires have that you can adopt to your life today to immediately become more successful in pretty much every area of your life that stuff applies to, which is pretty cool. So we're going to get to that in just a minute. But before we do, why don't we get to today's quick tip? All right. So our quick tip is simple. So recently actually on David's recommendation, I went and refinanced my house because he's like, we actually in today's episode with Stig, we talk about the house I bought and it was expensive. And I went and refinanced it and I saved like, I don't know, almost $1,000 a month. I think it was like 700 or something like that. Way lower interest rate. It's awesome, right? But it brought up, me and David were talking about that earlier. And we were just talking about this point where like sometimes people focus so much on acquiring new stuff or trying to buy something new, build something new, hire someone new. And sometimes it's worth looking at what you have and saying, hey, can I optimize this better? Because like my work of refinancing this house wasn't that difficult, but I saved more than I would have if I would have bought several new rental properties, which would have taken me a lot more work. And so that's kind of the quick tip today is whether it applies to, you know, refinancing or something totally different. And if you're going to refinance, just call a couple mortgage brokers, call a couple lenders. I mean, if you're in California, call David Green, like whatever, like just call somebody and be like, hey, what rate can you offer me? What would my new payment be? And see what they can do, because it's just a good way to preserve some more money and make some more money. David, any thoughts on that?
That's a great point, that you saved more money refinancing than you would have made if you were to go and acquire more property and it was less work. So,
and it cost me no money to do it. So. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
The ROI on that's like infinite.
Infinite, yeah. It's like the upside downside conversation we had on today's show with our guest, Stig. I'm going to get his last name, Broderson. Hope I said that right. Stig is awesome. We talk about risk today, and I just think that's a really good example of like refinancing is a perfect example of what we're about to talk about later in today's show. You'll know what I mean when we get there.
Yep, great point.
Yeah, so anyway, listen, we go a little bit in the stock market investing a little bit, like beginner mistakes. Not a lot of time on that, but a little bit because there's a lot of people listening to this that want a balanced portfolio, real estate and stocks. So we talk a little bit about that with somebody who has studied it like more than almost any person I've ever known in my life. We talk about how to know what asset class is the right one for you and a whole lot more.
Spring is here, and you know what that means. Fresh flowers, fresh air, fresh starts. So why not take a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security? SimpliSafe protects my home during the busy spring season when I'm out leveling up my portfolio. But you know why I really love SimpliSafe? Because it's very easy to install. As a matter of fact, I set up my entire system, my personal home, which is a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, in less than 30 minutes. They've got a super simple app, as whenever we're on vacation, we have friends come by the house to water the plants, check on the house, whatever it is. We're able to turn off our alarm right before our friends get to the house and turn it on right after they leave instantly. SimpliSafe offers a wide variety of high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods. They've got indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch day and night, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day. And I challenge you to figure out what you can buy for less than $1 a day. And with the 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and we want you to have it too. So go get 20% off of your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. That's simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. As home prices and interest rates continue to rise and inventory levels dip, it's getting harder to find quality flips and wholesale deals. When there's not enough on-market inventory to go around, it's time to start looking off-market. Lucky for you, there are millions of homeowners nationwide who own a property they need to get off their hands. I got two words for you, my friend. PropStream it. PropStream is the leading real estate data provider and recognized as a Tech 100 honoree by Housing Wire for the fourth consecutive year. With PropStream, you can search over 155 million properties nationwide using 120-plus search filters like pre-foreclosure, bankruptcy, pre-probate, failed listings, and more to help you find motivated sellers in seconds. PropStream offers both public record data and an MLS sales estimate that's over 99% accurate to help you get the most accurate comps even in non-disclosure states. PropStream also provides lead automation, skip tracing, and a marketing suite with emails, postcards, and custom landing pages to close more deals efficiently. Get started today with their 7-day free trial and get 50 leads for free. Head on over to www.propstream.com/BP. That's www.propstream.com/BP. This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that I turned one of my first homes into an Airbnb? It's true. And it even helped me get the extra income I needed to launch my real estate career. So if you want to try your hand at making even more income with your property, Airbnb is the place to be. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With that, I think we're ready to launch this thing. You ready, David Green?
Let's bring him in.
All right, let's get to the interview with Stig Brodersen. And by the way, everyone, so Stig, if you're wondering how he ended up on the show, besides the fact that he's wicked smart and super cool, he has his own podcast called We Study Billionaires. You've probably seen it in the iTunes or Spotify or Google Play, you know, whatever you're listening to podcasts on, their rankings, because he has got a really like top rated investing show, again, called We Study Billionaires. So we are super lucky to have a guy like Stig with us today. So with that said, let's get to the interview. All right. Welcome to the Bigger Pockets podcast. Stig, how you doing, man? Welcome.
I'm great. I'm great. Brandon, David, thank you so much for having me on your show. I mean, it's an honor.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm excited to dig into your story a little bit, your life. Maybe we can start by just getting a quick background on first of all, who you are and why are you here today? Like, you're not an active, like super active American real estate investor, like 99% of people on this show are. So kind of what's your background?
Yeah, I'm actually sitting in Denmark right now, and I am Danish. And I know for most of you, like a Danish, isn't that like a cake or something you would go to the bakery? Like, no, it's like it's just a person from Denmark. So yeah, I was here, and you know, I got to know your team, and so we just thought about it could be fun to like chat, and perhaps I could bring something else to the game. You know, I am not a typical real estate American based investor. I'm definitely in this other weird thing, you know, studying billionaires, talking a bit about stock investing. So, so I guess that's my background.
Cool. Yeah. I the reason I thought this would be fun too is because we, you know, myself included, tend to get in these ruts where like all I do is surround myself with the same type of people who do the same type of investing. And so what I'm trying to do is get outside that zone a little bit. And I want our audience to as well think like, what else is possible out there? And then not so much even necessarily, maybe they're not going to go and invest the same way you invest, but I want them to think, and I want people to think, and I want to think the way that you think, or I want to learn the way that you think and the way that you process. And I know you interview a ton of really, really high value people. People are very smart and very wealthy. And you've studied this, obviously. You have a podcast on that you study billionaires, right? So you know this stuff. And so I just thought our audience could get a ton of value. So why don't we start at the kind of beginning? You know, my producer, Kevin, here says that we need to ask you about your connection with Bigger Pockets. And I have no idea what that is. So, you know, what's up with Bigger Pockets and you?
You know, you guys probably don't know it, but, you know, the next time we got to meet up, not only will you have the traditional Danish dish I told you about before we started the interview, stick flesk and basil sauce. We will.
Wait, I'm sorry. Stick fingers, vanilla
right,
sauce.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. Got it.
And so we will also have, I think I owe everyone on the team a beer. And I know that your team is growing, so it might be very expensive for me to promise that. But, you know, it's pretty cool. So back in 2016, I actually didn't have a relationship really with Bigger Pockets. I was in Seoul, South Korea, and I didn't know anyone. And, you know, I didn't speak their language. And, well, whenever I say I didn't know anyone, I sort of like had this one cup of coffee with this random dude who was there. His name was Kevin, and he heard about me because we before then had interviewed Josh on our podcast. So
okay, yeah,
you know, that was more or less that. You know, Josh gave us this great idea that we should have like a mic flag. You know, he was the very reason for that. And so but that was really it. You know, not like a close-knit connection, anything like that. But, you know, we were there and, you know, I feel a little weird. And this was, I wasn't together with Kevin whenever that happened. This happened probably a few weeks later. And I just started to feel a little weird. Actually, I didn't really feel good at all. And, you know, I had to be hospitalized. And the doctors told me I had appendicitis and I needed surgery right away. And I know this, you're already thinking this is a morbid story. It has a somewhat good ending. So I do want to lead with that. And so, you know, nice doctors at the word, they were like, no, you know, it's bad. You know, you need surgery. We only have VIP suites available, but please, you know, show me your insurance. And, so that was pretty bad, not just because I still, you know, to this day doubt if they truly only had VIP suites available, or they could just feel I was a very, let's call them, motivated buyer. And so I didn't have any valid insurance and the hospital wouldn't take my Visa card because, you know, this was a large amount in a foreign currency, in a foreign country even. And my, you know, my bank automatically blocked my card because, you know, it was just weird. It was just procedure. Yeah. And it was daytime in Seoul, but like it was the middle of night in Denmark. So I couldn't call anyone for them to raise my limit. So what do I do? I knew one person there in Seoul, my friend from Bigger Pockets. And he came to the hospital and bailed me out. And it was a pretty sizable bill. Let's just call it like that. And I'm not telling this story because I want people to like, I don't want you, Brandon, to be like flooded with hospital bills from your listeners. That's not what I'm saying. But I didn't know the guy. He didn't know me. But because of Bigger Pockets, because he knew we had this relationship, he trusted me enough to just like, you know, put the MasterCard down and be like, I'm going to pay for this. So guys, what can I say? I own you probably more than one beer next time. It's incredible what you guys have built with Bigger Pockets. It's just unbelievable.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah, I like to think of the Bigger Pockets community as just like it's weird because you think like real estate investors, especially, and just people in business and entrepreneurship would be very against each other. But what I find is that most people in the Bigger Pockets community are always for each other, right? We're always helping each other out and trying to like, you know, grow as a community, which is just kind of a cool thing that Josh built. And, you know, David and I are kind of carrying the torch today. So that's a very cool story. Bigger Pockets saved your life. You can cut me a check in the future if you'd like to. Stig, I'll take... That's cool, man. All right. So let's talk about billionaires for a minute. First of all, where did the whole idea... Like, what's the story behind We Study Billionaires, the Investor Podcast Network? Like, where'd that come from?
Yeah, so it's a good question because studying billionaires, I mean, it seems like such a tall order. I mean, who would even start doing that? So, you know, this goes all the way back to 2012, 2013, probably even before we started. And, you know, I just hated my day job. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners can really resonate with that. And so... You know, I'm with some friends of mine, and one of my friends claimed that being successful is not really a secret, which was, you know, nice to know because to us, it was like this big black box. You know, some people were rich, and we definitely were not rich. So how did it happen? And his idea was, and by the way, he wasn't rich either, but his idea was just that you could just do what other successful people are doing. And, you know, even if you're not doing as well as a billionaire, I mean, hey, you might still end up becoming a millionaire. So why not go into some of the same habits at least? And, you know, we had a few beers at this point in time. So, you know, we were just all about, you know, big talk, like we got to conquer the world, right? Yep. So what we did was that we pulled up the Forbes 400 list. Because why wouldn't we? Just for inspiration. And at the very top of the list, then you have Bill Gates, like $72 billion. And I was like, am I going to be the next Bill Gates? Well, you know, I probably couldn't think of a person in the world who would be as bad as creating a new Microsoft and disrupting technology as me. So, you know, so much for being the next billionaire, right? So number two on that list, that was Warren Buffett. Well, a measly $58 billion, but still, you know, a nice chunk
poor
change.
Guy. Poor guy,
right? Yeah. So to some extent, it seemed a lot more like me. And keep in mind, I didn't know anything about stock investing, but, you know, he was sitting at home figuring out what to invest in. I mean, it didn't seem easy, but it didn't, I mean, it seemed a lot easier than what Bill Gates did. So,
sure.
You know, reading about him and you know, it just he just fascinated me because, you know, he started talking about he was always tap dancing to work. And, you know, if there was one person that wasn't, you know, tap dancing to work, that was me. And, you know, he didn't have a boss. Check. I like that idea, not having a boss. So, you know, I decided to figure out how do I invest in stocks? And, you know, at that point in time, you know, I thought perhaps I could be the next Warren Buffett. And it probably took me 1 to 2 seconds to figure out that I'm not, you know, no one will ever be. And so being a student at Warren Buffett, you know, I went to this Warren Buffett community, and this is as dry as you could probably think, you know. So I would go to this, you know, online community about Warren Buffett, talking about stock picks, and I met my co-host back then, and we talked back and forth about, you know, not to the same extent as Bigger Pockets, but it was still like, hey, stranger, let's see if we can help each other become wealthier. Let's help each other, you know, invest. And so, you know, I would say at that point in time, we had a reasonable idea how to invest. Let's say I was just less bad. But, you know, based on that, we decided to start what was called The Investors Podcast at the time. It was later rebranded to We Study Billionaires.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
So you decided to start a podcast to study billionaires. And then I'm assuming you started investing as well. Like, I mean, you're into like stocks and stuff right now, right? Like what do you personally do investing wise? Like what have you taken from all these people and applied to your life?
Yeah. So for us, you know, it was really stocks. You know, stocks always resonated with me. And so I also invest into real estate, but I don't have I think there was just some asset class that speaks more to you than other asset classes. There's just something that just makes more sense. And so, you know, for someone like me, I could probably have, you know, chosen any other billionaire if at least that billionaire has been, you know, top of the list. But the whole idea about, you know, sitting at home, I tend to be an introvert kind of guy, but, you know, sitting at home, studying, you know, doing some research, investing, I mean, that seemed quite appealing to me compared to so many other type of asset classes. So
yeah, you know, I don't want to move past this because it's so powerful. And we talked about this actually on another recent episode we did. And I use this phrase like follow the fire. Like we even sell a t-shirt now, Bigger Pockets, called follow the fire. In other words, when you have this like interest, this fire for an asset class, like follow that. Like I don't think like this is going to sound sacrilegious coming from the like, Bigger Pockets guy, right? Like I don't think real estate is the best investment for everyone. I think the best investment for everyone is the one that fires them up, right? It's the one that you were like stocks. Oh, I'm running towards. Like I tried reading a book on stocks one time in my life. I couldn't get through it. I got through like one chapter and I was like, I don't get it. I don't like it. It doesn't feel right to me, but it resonated in your soul. You're like, yes, this is what makes sense. And that's why I think you leaned into that. Do you also find like, is that what you see in all your studying of billionaires and all the people you've interviewed? Do you see that common trait? Is they went after what they just loved?
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. You know, I think we all can start with, you know, analysis paralysis, especially whenever we are just starting out with something brand new. And, you know, there might be like listening to me or listening to you and like, oh my God, you know, Brandon and David have done all these amazing deals. And how can I ever do that? And you just, you know, get your feet wet, just start making one deal, just like, just do something, just start investing $1 and then see what resonates with you. I mean, you could be the smartest guy in the room, but if you haven't invested that, you know, single dollar, you know, what is it really worth? You know, you really have to go out there. So really to your point, studying billionaires, like how do they invest and what do they have in common? I would say that we probably found three timeless principles for all the billionaires that we studied. And so let me list those three and then I can dig into each one of them. I want to say the first thing is that billionaires actually want to be millionaires. The second thing is that they make asymmetric bets or asymmetric investments, if you like. And then the last thing is that billionaires are just learning machines. Mm. And so to the first one, people might already be like, hey, I want to be a millionaire. Does that mean I'll become a billionaire? That sounds...
Yes.
Yes.
Guaranteed.
Yes. Sign me up, right? And so I would argue that 99% of people do not want to become millionaires. And that's why they don't want to become billionaires. And you might be like, that still doesn't make any sense. But let me try and confuse you. What do you think of if I say I want to give you $1 million? So
what do I think of?
What do you think of? Like, yeah, I'm gonna give you $1 million. I don't know if that's the best test. Just for the sake of argument.
Sure. I think you, well, my first thought is you'd have to be really rich to want to give me $1 million. And a very nice guy.
Well, thank you. But, you know, I've done this test with a few because people do come and ask me, oh, like, how do I become a millionaire or a billionaire? And like I'm, and I would say that I always ask them, so, oh, okay, you get $1 million. Like, what then? And then most people say, I'm definitely going to buy a bigger home, big TV, bigger car. And perhaps you already a millionaire, Brandon. So I don't even... Oh, even a billionaire. Who knows? Sorry.
I might be a billionaire. Thinking. I'm working there.
Working there. And so, you know, most people don't want to be millionaires. They want to spend $1 million.
Yes. Yes.
And they're wishing for $1 million. And there's nothing wrong with spending $1 million. Like, hey, you earned it. Spend them. That's fine. But if that is what drives you, spending $1 million, you'll probably never become a million in the first place. And let me just give you one story. You know, billionaire Charlie Munger, vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway, you know, he did it for independence. It wasn't a question of money. It was really independence. So, you know, he just loved the game so much. And he was so much into the habit of underspending, investing the difference that, you know, with time, you know, it was just logic for him to become a billionaire. And so with that million, it wasn't like Michelin restaurants or fancy cars. Like, it was chips on the table. You know, he could develop more real estate projects. That was what he spent his money on. And whenever he stopped doing that, he would then start investing in stocks and buying businesses. And the entire point is that you have to love the game. If you don't love the game, if you do it for spending, no, that's it's just be that's too hard for you to get there.
Yeah. That's such a good point. I mean, like, I'm sure you've heard the same studies or whatever, where like most athletes, like professional football players who make millions of dollars, end up going bankrupt, or a good portion of them, or people who win the lottery within like 3 years, they're flat broke again. Because like the mindset behind becoming a billionaire or a millionaire is very different than the mindset behind just the average person. And until you have that mindset, and the mindset is like, when you get extra money, do you immediately go spend that money? That's a big piece of it. You know, today, like I make a good chunk of money. I make a good amount of money that comes in every year, but I dump almost all of it, or at least a sizable portion, into either real estate or hiring people. Cause I think those are like the two best investments. Like, for me, is like growing my business, which is the mobile home park empire that I'm trying to build. We're buying a bunch of mobile home parks through Open Door Capital. So there's that. And then there's also like my own personal real estate, where I'll actually put money into my own real estate fund or into other real estate deals, because those are the two things that fire me up. And so like, and I know, David, you're the same way. You take that extra income and you hire employees, or you put it into real estate, because that mentality just really drives people. Like, again, I'm glad you brought that up, because most people, when they make an extra dollar, they figure out how to spend an extra dollar. They make an extra $10, they spend an extra $10. And the worst part is when they do that by them trapping themselves in a lifestyle where they have to continue doing that forever. And therefore, they never get ahead. They never get the extra savings. Like, I know people who are living paycheck to paycheck, making $500,000 a year. And it's like, they can't get out because they got their, you know, $900 a month car payments and three of them. And, you know, it's crazy. David, what do you think on that?
I think this is one of the most brilliant things ever anyone has ever said on our podcast. And I love... its brilliance is in its simplicity, because it applies to everyone, that if you want to spend $1 million, which was the point, you're never going to, well, not never, but you are less likely to make $1 million, because when you study the people that are millionaires, they're not asking that question of what would I spend it on. When you said that to me, I remember when you asked that question, what would you do with $1 million? I remember being around 21, 22 years old, and asking myself that question, and thinking I honestly would tell someone I don't want that money, because I knew it would crush me, that I didn't have a foundation to support the weight of having $1 million, and that I knew that I needed to build it, but that what I would gain in the process of building that foundation would allow me to, you know, have much more than $1 million. And then, Brandon, your point of when you're spending money, you are loath to now invest, because investing is risky. If I put my money into this deal, I'm always asking myself, what would happen if it goes wrong? What happens if the price of the asset drops? What happens if I have vacancy? I'm always asking worst case scenario. And I think most people naturally think that way. Well, when you're a saver and you have low expenses, you feel much more comfortable taking the risk that you need to build the asset class to become a millionaire. When you're not good at saving and you know that, or you don't have a lot of money in the bank, when someone presents you with the opportunity that the millionaire would jump on, the first thing you think is, what if it goes wrong? I can't support this. And then you don't take action. So it really is an amplified process of saving money allows you to be more aggressive with making investments, which grows your net worth, which makes you more experienced, which gives you more opportunity. And you love that game, as opposed to, as soon as I get a dollar, I spend it. So I'm always afraid to invest and I can't get out of my job and putting all my time into this W-2 because I need it to pay for the things that I've already bought, that I had the car payment, the big house, whatever it was. It really is that simple. And each of you made amazing points. I could talk about this forever. I think everyone should listen to this and really ask themselves that question. If I got $1 million right now, what would I do with it?
Mm-hmm. That's good. So Stig, let's talk about the first one was billionaires. They want to become millionaires. And I like to tell people like wealth is not an accident. Wealth is not a, you know, like I got lucky. I got in the right place at the right time. I mean, yes, there are examples of that, but almost every wealthy person I know became wealthy because they were intentional about becoming wealthy. Like they, it's a skill. Like I wasn't born naturally good at anything but crying and, you know, crap in my pants, but like I'm good like today at real estate because it's something I practiced and I read about and I studied and I followed the fire to get there. So if that's the first thing is they want billionaires, like had an intention about it and they want to become millionaires. What was that second thing? Let's move into there.
Yeah. So the second thing would be that billionaires take asymmetric bets. And, you know, you always hear that, you know, great risk, great rewards. And, you know, billionaires would just disagree with that. I mean, you could still take bets that if you're right, you would be ridiculously rich. And if you're wrong, you just didn't lose much. And so, you know, yeah. If you take the story of Richard Branson, you know, he, and this was all the way back in 1984, but I just love this story. You know, he was stuck trying to leave Puerto Rico for the British Virgin Islands, and his flight was grounded. So he figured out how much it would cost to charter a plane from Boeing. And then he compared that to how much, you know, if you had to pool that across all the passengers, how much would that be? In case you're wondering, that would be $39 apparently. And so, you know, he just went, you know, down the aisle trying to sell tickets just to test it out, you know, talk about a minimal viable product. He didn't even have a plane at the time, right? And so that was really the birth of Virgin Airlines. And you probably know that as a discount carrier today. And you might be thinking, well, starting an airline, that is super, super expensive. Like how can we do that? Was it because he was super rich? Like he already had a record company at the time, but he actually didn't make that much money because of that. And it does take a few million dollars to, you know, buy a commercial plane. But what he actually did was he called up Boeing, and he can be very, very persuasive. And he convinced them that, you know, he would try and lease a plane just for one trip. You know, just one trip. And the plane he was talking about, that was already, I mean, it was already grounded. Like he could just, you know, hey, let me just pay the operating cost just for one flight. And you know what he said to Boeing, you know, if this is successful, I'll buy the plane. But if this is not successful, you know, yeah, I don't know if you're gonna lose money, but at least I'm gonna pay for, you know, one trip. And so he gave Boeing an asymmetric bet. And in return, he himself got an asymmetric bet. Because, yeah, what happened if he was successful? Well, I mean, yeah, he probably had to shell a few bucks for that. But, you know, if he was successful, and he was pretty sure he would be, you know, he could start his own company. And he would get, you know, validation right then and there, whether or not it would be effective. And so, you know, we've seen that story so many times. I could also mention, you know, Bill Gates starting Microsoft with Paul Allen. You know, he dropped out of college, as I'm sure you guys know, because, you know, he was worried that he would miss out on the personal computer revolution. So he basically made a deal with his parents that if he couldn't make Microsoft successful, well, you know, he would just go back to school.
Yeah.
And so that was an astronomical bet. You know, if he was right, you know, hey, that's Microsoft. And if he was wrong, I mean, what did he lose? Like a semester, too.
Yeah.
And he would probably get an education worth much more than the one he was getting just from failing in doing Microsoft. So we just see a lot of those astronomic bets with all the billionaires that we are studying.
Dude, that's such a good point. Because oftentimes I think we look at bets and we look at things as like a 50-50 odds. Like, well, if I win, I'm going to get a lot of money. Because like that's how gambling, right? Like you put all your money on black or you know, whatever. It's like you either win or you lose, and you lose everything or you win a lot. But the reality is with business, especially, and I see it a lot in real estate, in that like there's so many opportunities where there's tiny, minuscule risk with the opportunity for significant reward. It's like so out of balance in our favor that it's not like, well, I think most people, when they think of investing, they think of real estate or they think of stocks or they think of any kind of investing as a, that's risky, boy. You know, you sure you want to be putting your money in that? You might lose everything. It's like the world thinks it's like a 50-50 chance you're going to lose everything. And that's what investing is, but it's not. It's usually like starting a business doesn't cost that much, but the upside is huge. You know, buying a real estate deal, even making an offer. I mean, here's a real tangible example. You know, we make offers on real estate deals all the time. David does as well, right? We're making offers on deals. Like worst case, usually let's say, for example, I'm going to go offer on $1 million mobile home park, right? I'm going to put down $10,000 in earnest money. Now that sounds like a lot of money, $10,000 that I'm risking. But the truth is, like, I get that money back if I back out for the right reason. So there's a lot of these bumpers we set up to be able to reduce our risk. And then even if at the end of the day, I didn't get that $10,000 back, that's $10,000 at a very low chance of losing 10 grand and a very big chance of making hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so, like, especially when you're talking investing, we're talking about 5, 10, 20, 30 year timelines. It's almost, I mean, as long as I can manage correctly, there's almost no chance of me not making hundreds of thousands of dollars off that. So that's that asymmetric like bet that billionaires are making. That's kind of what you're saying. Am I summarizing that well?
Right. Yeah. Much better than me, by the way. But yes, no. It's exactly what I'm saying, Brandon.
Yeah. That's so, it's another one of those points I never really thought about. Because again, like I think the world just kind of looks at these bets as a 50-50. David, what are your thoughts on that?
It's another brilliant point. And I think as you were talking, Stig, I was thinking about why it is that people tend to think that risk and reward are always equal, that the more money I can make, that inherently there has to be more risk. And it's always the inexperienced who assume that. When people ask Brandon and I, should I flip a house? I don't know. What if I lose all my money? What if it doesn't sell? We tend to inherently give advice. Well, could you rent it out if it didn't make money on the flip? If your rehab budget went too high, would it cash flow? That's a perfect example of how we are naturally thinking.
Dude, so true stories. I've said this on the podcast before, I think. But when I was looking at moving to Hawaii a couple of years ago, and I was looking, I mean, my houses before were like in the $200,000 range. Like that was a big house for me. And then all of a sudden there's this property that's almost $2 million out here in Hawaii that I really loved. I fell in love with this house. I know they say don't fall in love with your house, but I fell in love with the house. And I called Dave and I was like, dude, there's this amazing house. There's no way I'm going to buy this thing. There's no way I can do this. It's 10 times more than anything I'd ever bought before. And he asked, like, in the logic he walked me through was, let's walk through the downside. So let's say you have to rent out the property. It's a three-unit property. So you have to rent out all three units. What happens? I'm like, oh, I guess I break even. He's like, okay, so what's the upside? What could you get if you held this property? Is it going to be worth more or less than $2 million 20 years from now in Hawaii with an ocean view and a pool? Oh, I guess it's going to be worth a whole lot more than that. He's like, so what you're telling me, Brandon, is that worst case scenario, you invest in something and you break even for a while, and then it's worth millions of dollars more later. And best case, you live in Hawaii, live for free or cheap because you're house hacking, and get to enjoy Hawaii life and have millions of dollars later on. And I'm like that was the conversation that completely changed my life, because I was like, David, you're right. And I put the offer on the property. We bought the property. Now I live in Maui and I live cheaper than I would in most areas. And so like, that was just another example of that bet that in my head, I was thinking like 50-50, or that I'm making a crazy bet, but I really wasn't.
Wow, that's an amazing story. And, you know,
thanks.
I mean, that's absolutely amazing. Yeah, right. God, I mean, and you're right, because, you know, it just seems to be like a binary income, a binary choice, right? You're just like, either you're going to have, you know, you're set for life, or you're just going to, you know, be in debt prison the rest of your life. And that's typically not the two scenarios that we're working with.
It's not. It actually reminds me of one of my favorite quotes of all time. I think it was Mark Cuban said it. I'm pretty sure he said, The great thing about entrepreneurship, I'm probably butchering the quote, but the great thing about entrepreneurship is you only have to be right once. And what he meant by that is you could start something and then it fails and you learn a little bit. So, you know, I don't even know if I'd call it a failure, but you start something else and then it fails and you start something else and it fails. You start something else and you make $4 million and you sell that company for $4 million. And you're like, oh, well, now I'm set for life. So again, I love that idea that like these asymmetric bets that there's things we can do. And then what, shifting our mindset of it's risky to it's really not very risky, but the upside is tremendous. I think that's just a great way of thinking. That's cool, man.
Yeah. And let's talk about Mark Cuban, because the third characteristic that we see with billionaires is that they're just learning machines, right? And so whenever people think about Mark Cuban, they might be thinking Shark Tank or, you know, Dallas Mavericks, whatever. But, you know, he is just the most voracious reader that you can think of, you know, reading 4 or 5 hours today. And I mean, he doesn't have to, if you think about, you know, reading to become a billionaire, because, you know, he made it, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, whenever he started out, you know, he was trying to sell, you know, computer software, you know, in Dallas and, you know, went to the library, you know, every single day to study those manuals and bring the manuals home with him just so he could excel in that, because the other guys he was competing with, you know, they have their fancy degrees and, you know, they said all the right things. But he was like, hey, if I spend, you know, 4 or 5, 8 hours a day, whatnot, learning about this, I can probably compete with them in no time. And he was, you know, right. And especially like if you're in sales, you know, yeah, degrees are one thing, but like if you can sell, you know, everyone wants to work with you. I mean, that's just so powerful. And so his idea was really, you know, hey, you can pay, you know, tens of thousands of dollars going to college, or, you know, spend $20 and read one book in one day, which is the most valuable lesson another accomplished person have spent a lifetime learning. You know, and that was just his process. And to me, that was just absolutely amazing. But Mark Cuban is really just one example. I mean, billionaires are by nature just super, super competitive, because business is the ultimate sport. I think that's a quote I have from Mark Cuban, right? Yep. And so you compete 24/7, and if you don't keep learning, you'll just lose. I mean, the only way to stay competitive is just doing, like, going into the right habits, learning, outperform your competitors just by being smarter than them. And yes, we can enjoy the proceeds, but going back to the first point there is that as much as you can enjoy your proceeds, it has to be a habit. It has to be something that's fun. And billionaires, yes, they like having $1 billion, but it's fun for them. I don't want this to sound condescending in any way if I say it's a game, because then people are like, oh, you don't respect other people. That's not my point at all. But it's a game. They like the game. You know, you're sitting in your, you know, multi-million Hawaii, you know, mansion, but you still do what you do because, like, you're still hungry. And if you weren't hungry, you probably wouldn't have gotten there in the first place.
Yeah, it is a game. I talk about that all the time, like the game of real estate, the game of investing, the game of all, like, and when you think of it that way, it doesn't mean you take it lightly. Like, if you've ever seen me play Monopoly, you know, I don't take games lightly, but it's a game. It's something that's fun. It's exciting. I like doing it. This is phenomenal. I mean, those three things for billionaires, like the fact that they do study and they're voracious readers. I love that. It makes me feel, I'm like, hey, maybe I got a shot at this billionaire thing, because I read all the time. I love reading. And whether or not it's listening to audiobooks or podcasts, it's just education, right? They're learners, lifetime learners. And then the asymmetric bets was, you know, just solid. And then just that intentionality they want to become a millionaire or, you know, billionaire down the road. I think it is solid.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Are you about to sell a property? Wait like 60 seconds because this could save you thousands. Our friends at 1031 Pros have saved their clients more than $500 million, with a B, in taxes with 1031 tax-deferred exchanges. With the 1031 exchange, you can say goodbye to the huge capital gains taxes when selling and roll your property's profit into another investment that could make you even more. Whether you're an individual investor, part of a larger group, or a title or real estate agent, 1031 Pros is ready to help. Trust me, I've done 1031 exchanges on multiple properties before, and it has saved me tens of thousands in taxes, if not more. With over 30 years of experience, 1031 Pros has handled over 20,000 audit-free exchanges, and they specialize in all types of exchanges: delayed, simultaneous, reverse, and improvement exchanges in all 50 states. And right now, Bigger Pockets listeners can get $250 off any exchange by visiting my1031pros.com/BP. That's my1031pros.com/BP to get $250 off today. Oh, and make sure to mention Bigger Pockets when you call. They take care of our people over there. Trying to run your business all by yourself? It's too hard to hire. I don't have the time, you say. What if I told you that all you needed was Indeed? Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to shift a little bit, and I want to talk about something that you are really good at and I'm really bad at, and that is the stock market. So I don't want to spend a ton of time dissecting the ins and outs of the stock market, but for somebody who maybe wants to get started, like diversifying their portfolio, maybe they've been doing real estate for a while and they want to start setting aside money in the stocks, where do I start? What's the first steps? What have you found to be a successful strategy? Where should I go?
So it's a very great question that you, it's something we should all ask, when we're starting, like, are we sure that we are, that we're following the right path? And you might be like, oh God, stock investing, I don't know anything. Where should I start? And, I would start studying Warren Buffett, not just because Warren Buffett is, probably the best investor in history, but he's also a great teacher whenever it comes to investing. And you just need to have this solid foundation whenever you start up. I mean, you can always and should always tweak your approach as you become smarter, but you'll just drift around and confuse yourself if you don't have a solid starting point. And I could say the same thing. Where do you start whenever you're in real estate? And it's not just because I'm here, but go to Bigger Pockets because Bigger Pockets, that's the Ten Commandments, right? So you might tweak it, you might improve on a few things, you might find something that really works for you, but have a solid foundation before you start, because otherwise you would just be hearing too much noise and too many things that just doesn't make any sense. And so whenever you do start learning about Warren Buffett, one of two things will probably happen. Perhaps you'll say to yourself, I just love reading financial statements. And all the things you don't say on the first day. But yeah. you would say something along those lines because you just find that you've never really been exposed to stocks before, but it's just so much fun. And if that's what you want to do, that's great. Definitely stocks are for you. I mean, that's the fire you're talking about in the beginning, right? Then the more likely thing that will happen is that you find stock investing super boring. And you can see why it makes sense in terms of compounding your wealth. You can see you want to diversify out of real estate, but you don't really enjoy the process. And that's completely fine too. So what I would just say to that is, if you really find stock investing interesting, it's okay to pick individual stocks. You know, read those financial statements, you know, learn about those companies. That's great. You know, who knows? You might be the next, you know, Warren Buffett. If you don't enjoy it, you know, buy an ETF. You know, buy, you know, a global stock market ETF, something really, really cheap from something like Vanguard, and just say, you know, I'm just going to put, you know, the same amount into that stock market every single day. I won't get the same amazing returns as I'll be doing in real estate. But, you know, I don't have to, because I don't spend any time on it. And it's something that's not as correlated. And it's just in terms of a mindset, you're like, you're doing okay. You're probably going to do more better than most, but you will get the average because you're buying the average, and that's okay too.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people look at investing like it's a science because it involves money. Just give me the step-by-step blueprint and I have to do it well. But what you're saying here, Stig, is that it's more of an art. It's like a sport. We can all love sport. We all want to play sports. It doesn't mean that Brandon and I are going to pick the same sport based on our body type or what we love. Stig is drawn to a different sport than David or Brandon would be drawn to. So that's the first thing, is give yourself permission to chase the sport that you feel like you would be best at. You know, Brandon and I talk and he wanted to go train jiu-jitsu because he's built like Dhalsim from Street Fighter. That makes a lot of sense. It wouldn't make sense for him to be a horse jockey. That would be terrible. Like, the horse could probably ride Brandon. That's
Limit me, David. Don't limit
All
me.
All right. Okay, Seabiscuit. We'll let you get out there. But even athletes, this is to build on your point, Stig, they train in other sports to help them. You see a lot of defensive or offensive linemen in the NFL that train MMA because they're trying to build a base. They're trying to get better with their hands and their feet moving. And they see elements from MMA that will help them in their job. So I think there's absolutely a place for the real estate investor to have part of their portfolio in stocks, or the stock market person to have some other options. If you look at business like it's a sport, you'll give yourself permission to make those decisions. And Stig, you also made a great point that it's not disrespectful to call it a sport just because there's money involved. If you look at professional athletes playing a game, most of them are more passionate and take that more serious than everybody who's going to work every day at their W-2 job that are not engaged in it. They don't want to be there. You know, Tom Brady just ripped apart my Raiders yesterday. At 43 years old, somehow still just so passionate about playing this game. And we all admire that. Tom Brady said, I want to be a quarterback. I don't care if I have physical limitations or I'm 43 years old or I can never eat a tomato for the rest of my life because they're unhealthy. I love to see the people that have that same passion with what they're doing, where they're investing and how they're building their wealth.
Yeah, that's really good, man.
Stig, when it comes to the people that you see are successful at what they're doing, have you picked up on a pattern that certain personalities tend to do better with certain types of investing?
You know, I think it comes back to what really fires you up. And let me try to put that into two different categories. I found that people tend to be either tangible or intangible. And so I'm not a tangible person. Like, if you told me how to, like, I don't know, fix a toilet, or, you know, put up a sink, or like, I'm like all thumbs, right? I can't do any of that. So I think there is a tendency to be, a lot of people are very tangible and they're very good in real estate investing. You know, they go out there, they like, they look at the property, they're like, they just have like intuition for it. And it probably, there's probably something like when the first 5 minutes are like, this is great, you know, using Brandon's metaphor before, you know, about falling in love with the house in Hawaii. You know, I fell in love with stock investing. I'm an intangible guy. You know, I don't want to drive different places and look at properties. That's just not my game. I don't have any issues with them. I'm sort of like using my own playbook in terms of, you know, I am invested in real estate, but I have another person doing it who I trust, who are much better than me because he's tangible. Whereas for me, it's like, It has to make sense. You know, Warren Buffett is quoted by saying, if it doesn't make sense for you right away, it will never make sense. Mm. And I think there's something to it. I know it sounds very, perhaps very negative, and you're like, oh my God, you know, I've been listening to 3 episodes of The Bigger Pockets now, and I don't know if I want to be a real estate investor. That's not what I'm saying at all. That's not the point. It's like, either it resonates with you, like, oh, I should actually go into real estate because, you know, that will give me a lot of independence. I can have a different life. If that doesn't resonate, if you're like, that's just a lot of work and I have less time to watch Netflix, you know, no, that's probably not the way to go. Mm. So, I don't know if I really responded to your question there, David. I feel I'm sort of like digressing. But that was sort of like my thoughts on some people just more prone to do one thing compared to another.
I think it's a great litmus test for the people that are trying to find their way. If you believe investing equals stocks and you look at this and you think, oh, I hate it, I just don't enjoy this, that isn't the way to go. And I think in general, the more successful that people become in business, the quicker they start to realize they hire the wrong person for the job. It feels wrong. You know it's wrong. You keep sticking it out trying to get that person there and they never do. And this, it applies to what you're talking about as well. And I think that's why this fire point is so good, because when you feel that fire, you're going to pursue it. You're going to be passionate. You're going to learn how to be good at that. And if you don't have it, you're not going to put the time in. So it's very simple, and success can be simple. You just follow that feeling.
Yeah, that's really good, man.
We're getting toward the end of our show now. And so I want to move away from the stock thing, but before I do, I want to just ask, like, mistakes, like, for those people who are getting into stocks, because I do plan to start investing more and more into those passive forms of investing, because I am getting tired of, you know, not that I change toilets anymore, but the more physical stuff. I'm working more and more towards the passive side of my career. And as I do, I'll be doing more stocks. So what are the mistakes that a lot of stock investors make?
I would say that, and let me first start by praising your community, because I think that real estate investors really have a leg up compared to stock investors, perhaps because it is more tangible. And, you know, so whenever you do your first deal, I really do think that those real estate investors have an advantage, because let's say, you know, they get a quote and, you know, $100,000, $200,000, whatever the quote is for that. And they're thinking already, okay, so what am I paying and what am I getting? And you know, they make some assumptions about that. And so whenever I'm thinking about, say, your first deal, and you would probably tell me, you know, you made a lot of mistakes. I think everyone makes mistakes whenever they do the first deal. But I hope at least you were like, oh, you know, how much does the property cost? You know, what type of cash flow would it generate? What do I think it's worth? And you might be wrong in your assessment, but at least that was your train of thought. Stock investors tend not to be as smart. And that definitely includes me whenever I started investing. And our way of thinking in the beginning goes along the lines of, hey, I like Apple's products. I should buy Apple stock. Mm. Or I like to say that Mark Zuckerberg is working for me, so I'm going to own Facebook stocks. And I don't think I ever heard of any investor or any stock investor who started out by saying, what is the stock worth? And then compare it to the price it's trading at. This just seems to be like a mental blocking whenever it comes to stocks compared to real estate, where you're like, yeah, you know what? Mm. What are similar properties being sold for? You know, even if you're wrong, you can sort of like have an idea of what it is. For stocks, it's like, Apple is trading at 320, but I heard it's worth more than $1 trillion or $2 trillion. Okay, I'm going to buy it 322. Like, that's typically just the way of thinking. And I'm definitely guilty as charged. So I think that is...
You know, it reminds me of real estate investors who are like, oh, I love that kitchen. Oh, that color of the kitchen cabinet's beautiful. Let's buy that property as an investment. It's like, wait. That doesn't make any logical sense whatsoever. But that's what you're saying. Like, people will do often in stocks is they'll like the product or they'll like the person. And that's why they choose to invest in it, not because of the fundamentals of the company.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, going to Walmart, you know, we want things that are cheap, you know, whenever it comes to stocks. And you can probably say the same thing about, in a hot real estate market. You just want to, like, it's just FOMO, right? Like, you want to get in because it's only getting higher. And you don't think about, you know, what the property of the stock cost and what it's worth, more importantly. And so I think that's generally an issue for most investors, but especially for something like stocks that are so intangible. I think it's more of a pain for those investors than for other asset classes. So for anyone who are considering jumping into stock investing, I would say if you don't know how to value a stock, don't buy it. If you don't know what a property is worth, you know, don't buy it. It's that simple, but it's still very profound. At least, you know, I didn't really think too much about it whenever I started, and I've just heard that story so many times. And so if anything you can take away from this interview, I would say, you know, knowing the difference between, you know, price and value. It's just so important.
That's really good, man.
Well, there's no comparables for a stock. You can't say, well, that the one down the street sold for X, so this one should be worth Y. And it's really more akin to valuing it based on the price to rent ratio or the ROI that you can get on the investment. Like, investors tend to look at this from a cash flow. If we look at the internal rate of return and we say, okay, how much could my money do here versus there? It's more similar when you're evaluating a company, is you're saying, what is the strength of this company and how much would I expect it to grow the money versus, well, Google traded at this and some other tech company traded at that. That other company's cheaper than Google, so they must be the better bet.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point, because for many probably, and keep in mind, you know, I have very little knowledge about real estate investing, but you sort of have an idea of like what kind of cash flow can it generate for something like Google, or you know, you can make, you know, talk about any other company. For at least for a lot of companies, you know, those earnings are just all over the place. So for you to sit and estimate, oh, what are the cash flows going to be the next 30 years? It's actually not as complicated as it sounds like. But I think stock investing seems too difficult to even get started with. And then whenever you hear like, you know, hey, I should be investing in stocks, you're just like, oh, let me just buy that Apple stock, or let me just buy that Amazon. I use Amazon all the time. Let's just buy that stock. It's gone up lately, so why don't you just do that? And I think that's very, very difficult. It's a difficult game to play, because we primarily talked about, you know, going into a stock. But that's one thing. When are you going to go out of the stock? Like, if you don't know what it's worth, when will you sell it? Like, when will you sell that and buy something else? I mean, it's just a game you don't want to play.
Yeah, man.
That's very wise.
Yeah, very much so. All right, well, let's move on to the last segment of our show here. This is called our
Famous Four.
This is the part of the show where we ask the same four questions every week to every guest, but we're going to alter them a little bit today because it's not a real estate specifically focused show. We'll call it the famous, you know, 3.5, we'll call it. But before we get to that, let's hear what's going on this week over around the Bigger Pockets Podcast Network.
Hey, Brandon and David. This past Monday on the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, Scott and I sat down with Nick Groover and reviewed his finances to see where he could make improvements to further himself down the path to financial independence. If you're feeling stuck in your finances and need a boost, this episode could be super helpful. Okay, now it's time for the Famous Four.
So let's get to the Famous Four. Again, we're going to alter this a little bit. Normally we ask what somebody's favorite real estate related book is, but I want to alter that a little bit and say, what's an episode of your podcast that people should go listen to later to kind of, you know, get an idea of what you guys have to offer? What's a good episode to refer people to?
So we study billionaires, obviously, and I could give a lot of handoffs, but, you know, and in the end, you know, business, you know, it's all about business. And whether it's stock investing, real estate investing, you know, it's all about people. You know, if you understand people, especially if you understand people in a business context, you know, you just like, you're way ahead of the pack. So I would recommend a book called Never Split the Difference. We just did an interview with the author, Chris Voss. And I highly recommend that. It just came out here a few weeks ago. So definitely worth listening to that. Pick up the book if you can, but if you don't want to do it, you can also just listen to the podcast. But other than that, you know, we talk about, you know, everything else, but I also want to highlight that I'm going to have Brandon and David with us here in the month or so. So we talk primarily about stock investing, but once in a while, we're lucky to talk about other things, and we'll be talking about real estate investing too. So starting billionaires, we have a focus on stock investing, but, you know, anything that could make you wealthy, we are studying that, and that definitely falls into that category.
Okay. All right, Stig, next question from me. In your own life with your goals, what are you most excited about in your future?
So I have this goal, and I know it probably comes off wrong. I just want to put all the disclaimers that I have. I would really like to build schools. Like, that's my that's my passion. I mean, this starting billionaires investing, that is, I absolutely love that. It's step one. Step two, I used to be a teacher. I guess you could still say I'm a teacher now. That is to build schools in developing countries. I don't really have like the blueprint, even though I have a lot of ideas in terms of how to do it. But that is what I'm most excited about. And until then, I'm very excited about what I do right now. But That's the master plan now that you're asking.
All right, man. I like it. That's awesome.
Yeah, you want to disseminate all this information that you've gathered and get it exposed to as much people as possible. I love that.
Cool, man. All right. My last question of the day, and David's got one more to kind of wrap us up with, but in your view, what separates successful investors or, you know, even billionaires from those who give up or they fail or they just never get started?
So let me use the example of Warren Buffett. I know I keep on going back to Warren Buffett or even Charlie Munger for that matter. And you're like, why do Stig need to like come up with like old dudes at least 90 years old? And the reason for that is really that we also find there's a lot of timeless principles in becoming wealthy, you know, Richest Man of Babylon, you know,
yeah.
And so many other great books. And so we sort of like want to see what, you know, stands the test of time. And, you know, Warren Buffett said that if he weren't a millionaire by the time he turned 30, he would jump off the tallest building in Omaha, Nebraska. And this is not my way of saying that, you know, billionaires are just suicidal. I mean, that's not the point at all. But he really had a laser focus on everything he was doing. And he had a plan. You know, as you said, you know, wealth doesn't come by accident. And they take full responsibility. Let me give you an example with Charlie Munger, you know, his right-hand man, vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway. You know, he lost his son. It's a terrible story. He lost his son, 9 years old, of leukemia and literally dying in his arms. I mean, that absolutely horrible, horrible thing happening. And later, he lost his sight on his left eye from a failed surgery. And so, yeah, so let's talk about the latter. So what did he do? Did he sue the doctor? No, he said that he felt he didn't do his research properly because he went to an eye doctor. And with that procedure, there was a 5% complication rate. He didn't go with another doctor who had a new procedure with a 2% complication rate. So he was like, I could be blaming the doctor. First of all, it wouldn't help. But what could I have done? Really taking that extreme ownership, because you can't really choose your problems. I know this is cliche that you can't choose your problems, but you can choose your mindset. I just found that so valuable. And you know, whenever you look at, you know, virtues that you really admire, you know, it's typically something that's not difficult to acquire. At least it shouldn't be. I mean, you might be thinking LeBron is, you know, awesome. But you know, you don't need to be, you know, MVP or something to be awesome. Like, if you really think, look around and like, oh, who am I? I really like, you know, David. You know, David's coming up with all these great ideas. He's kind. He's humble. I mean, all those things are, you know, virtues that you can acquire yourself. It's like no cost. You have to put in a bit of work, but you can decide to be that person. It's not being like 7 feet tall. I mean, that's not the point. And so yeah, that separates billionaires and you know, the rest of us. I'm definitely a work in progress.
Well, I love that you bring up the taking ownership and the story of Charlie Munger and his eye, because like it just relates back to something I literally did this last night. Last night I get home, I was out at the beach with my family or something, and we get home and there's a diaper. No, it wasn't a totally disgusting diaper, but it was a diaper all shredded over the floor in my room. My dog had taken this diaper and just shredded it. And I literally yelled the words out loud, "Ah, stupid dog." And then I was like, wait, the dog didn't go into the garbage and pull it out. Like, I left the diaper after changing my son's diaper on the floor with my dog in the room, knowing like that would happen. It's like, who was the stupid dog in that situation? Was that my dog or was that me? And I think there, like, it was this moment where I was like, stupid Brandon. Like, I had to like realize like it wasn't the dog. And I think that's such an analogy for life. Of oftentimes we yell at things like, oh, stupid this, stupid that, this is annoying, ah, COVID stopped all my plans, right? But in reality, like, I mean, not that we're responsible for everything, but you know, we have a tremendous amount of responsibility and the way that we direct our life. And so I guess, yeah, look at that next time ever when you're listening to this and you get angry at something, ask yourself, was it the dog being stupid or was it you being stupid? And I think that's what billionaires do. Well, with that said, David Green, you want to take us out of here, ask your final questions, and we'll wrap this thing up. This has been amazing.
That was a great point, Brandon. Thanks for sharing that.
Well, thank you. Thanks, stupid dog.
Last question of the show, Stig. This has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you very much for sharing your time with us. Where can people find out more about you?
So thank you for giving me the opportunity to give a plug. People can search for The Investors Podcast Network. We have multiple shows, Millennial Investing. We even have one about real estate investing, but you are free to edit that out. We have...
We'll plug it.
Oh, God, you guys are the best. We have something about work-life balance, and then also my show, We Study Billionaires, that I host with my good friend Preston Pish. And every week we talk about financial markets, billionaires, and business, mostly on the stock market, like I mentioned there, but really anything, you know, commodities, gold, bonds, whatever you can think of. So yeah, that's where you can find us.
Awesome. Very cool, man. This has been phenomenal. Really, really enjoyed having you on the show today. Learned a ton. I can't wait to do it and chat with you about real estate on your show in the coming weeks. And David Green, get us out of here.
Thank you very much, Stig. This is David Green for Brandon Future Horse Jockey Turner, signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.